One over. Channel one over on Raft's reel. Channel one over and beginning of the visit with Leola. There's Monday night at supper, the 1st of March, 1971. Channel one over. Channel one over on Raft's reel. Beginning of the visit with Leola. There's Monday night at supper, the 1st of March, 1971, on Miss Patterson and the old study group and Lara. Beginning of the visit with Leola Wicks. This Monday at supper, 1st of March, 1971, channel one over. Channel one over, beginning of the visit with Leola Wicks, this Monday night after supper, the 1st of March, 1971, channel one over. Channel one over, beginning of the visit with Leola Wicks, channel one over, this Monday night after supper, the 1st of March, 1971.
Go out in the morning, be gone all day to the studio. And a man, that was before the part of the beginning of it, was before the days of the automobile. So at the community house where they lived, when the artist lived, the housekeeper there, she'd put up all these little lunches, and the man would take a horse and wagon and deliver those lunches to the people.
Leola, I didn't know you was going to get into something interesting. I want to hear about, I never heard you tell about McDowell. Now, that was your hometown?
Mm-hmm. Peterborough, New Hampshire. Well, I guess nothing ever came up. In fact, that she was telling me about her music.
Let's get this out of the way.
Let's see, then in 38, we had the hurricane. And it just disrupted the woods. Blew it all, practically all down. I left home in 43, so I don't know what they're doing there now. She was one of the dreams.
What was it?
He missed all of that. You just had to tell him again, and I'll have to sort of listen to it again, too, because I was so surprised.
Yeah.
One of the McDowell's compositions was The House of Dreams. Mm-hmm. And so they'd take these different songs, you know, and then different people would act out things about it. And this is Zelma Bartholomew. She was the soprano. She was the main muse. They called them muses and dreams. And she was supported by four other muses. And then they took 10 of us youngsters, about 10, 12 years old, girls, and we were the dreams. And they took this green burlap, just about like color of an evergreen tree, and cut a place for our head and our arms, and they put that on us. Then they put a piece of, Mother used to call it buckram, but it's that stiffening that they used to use in dressmaking and things like that, and they hitched it some way here, so it came way out like this. And then they took, very thin material, kind of a smoky gray, and they'd hitch it on, you put your arm out, and they'd have a loop here, and they'd hitch it on that little finger, and then they'd drape it all around you and bring it up around, drape it on this thing here, and bring it back around and end up the other way. Then, as they were singing their parts, why, we go around fluttering just like this.
Oh, yeah.
All around through there with them, you know. We had a good time at it.
Now, that was a little performance.
Mm-hmm. Pageant.
A pageant.
McDowell Pageant. They put that on in 1910. Let me see now. Seems to me as though it lasted nearly a week. They had the Boston Symphony Orchestra there. Charles Hackett was the tenor.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some others, but I don't remember them. But the Zelma Bartholomew and Charles Hackett were the principal singers. And then there was an old cotton mill in the middle of the town there, and it wasn't being used, and so they fixed that up for their cafeteria. Because the people came from all around, you know, and stayed during the whole performance.
Mm-hmm. But now this little performance, that was, help me out, saying, that was a something that he wrote?
It was a piece, The House of Dreams.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And then this is the way they interpreted it, the way it would be.
Oh. Well, that'd be nice.
It was very interesting.
And they established a colony, McDowell Colony, which is still in existence.
Yes, I'm thinking about the performance.
And the performance there with Leola in it. It's one of the
Dreams, Muses.
Dreams.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, you did other compositions, the same.
Well,
way?
They did other compositions, but that was the only one that I was in. And so that's where it stands out so vividly in my mind. Then there was another one, was called The Deserted Village, that he wrote. I can't remember. One of the nice singers at the town there, she sang the part in that. Oh, they had 200-300 people in on that. Just acting out the different parts and things that they had. Then in 1912, they put it on again, but it was not as extensive as it was in 1902.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, what was the occasion in 1910?
It was just 10 years. A period of 10 years had passed, and so they decided that they'd like to put it on again.
It started, yours was in 1902?
Two. That was the first one, the big one, yes. And then I think they put it on in 1910. I don't think they put it on like that again.
Oh.
But then they had, in the winter time, they formed the Choral Club. That was just the townspeople. And we'd meet and rehearse, and I remember this Mr. Hood from Nashua. He was quite a musical director, and he'd come up and train us, and then we'd have a concert, a big concert in the town hall.
Mm.
Oh.
Every winter.
Yes. Now this was, was this connection with the school?
No, this is the McDowell, connection with the McDowell Association.
Mm-hmm. And that was out in town.
That was what?
That was the townspeople.
Yes, at the winter concerts. But sometimes they'd have two or three, perhaps, that would come in and sing principal parts, but most of the singing was done by the townspeople.
Mm-hmm.
We had some real good singers back in those days.
I bet you did. Now, McDowell was born there?
No, I don't remember where he was born.
He lived there.
But he came there, lived there, and was sick there and died there. And, you know, Mrs. McDowell, she could sit down to the piano and she could play every one of those pieces of his without a bit of music in front of her.
Mm-hmm. Is that right?
And I think the last time that she played in public, she was 84. As she, in taking care of him, she had to lift him a great deal. She injured her back so that she had to go on crutches most of the time.
So she was a musician too.
Yes, she was. Mm-hmm. So America had a noted musician.
Yeah.
There's lots of people that never realized that.
Oh no. Well, now, your life has changed a good bit since then, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm, very much.
Now, you took part of those just as a member of the town spirit, one
mm-hmm.
of the town
yeah.
people? Just because you live there?
Just because I live there, yes.
Yeah. I forgot about your family. Did you have a big family?
No, just my brother and myself. Two of us. Mm-hmm. And I'm the only one left now.
And how did you get down here? Long way.
I entered the state of Florida the first day of January 1944.
Yeah.
And for health reasons, after my mother died in 41, I stayed on up there for 2 years. And then I had become a pioneer, one of Jehovah's Witnesses. And so I wanted to make a change. And this young couple, friends of mine, very close friends of mine, they were both pioneers. And the society sent them to Baltimore. So I think it was in June they left, and they made me promise that when they come back in September for their winter clothes and things, that I would move back with them. So I did, and we landed in Baltimore, and we stayed there October, November, and December. And I knew that I couldn't stay up there because it was too cold for me with my respiratory trouble. So I was just wondering which place I'd go. And we used to go to Washington, D.C. quite often to the congregation meetings there. And there was a chiropractor that all the friends went to, so of course I trailed along too. And I told him my situation, and I said I had thought either Florida or Arizona. And he suggested Florida. So I began to think along those lines, and then the latter part of December, the society moved my friends to Panama City, and there was an elderly sister down there that was associated with my friend Helen's family, and so Helen had written to them, and they said that there was a sister down in Fort Lauderdale whose pioneer partner had got sick, and she had to go back home, and she was looking for a pioneer partner. So I immediately got in touch with her, wrote to her, and it was agreed upon that I would go down there and become her partner. When I got down there, I found out that she was the daughter of two of my mother's very dear friends. That made it interesting. So I was there 15 months, and then I came up to Gainesville, and I've been here ever since.
How'd you land in Gainesville?
I came up to Dr. Jones for treatment. I wasn't well, see, and I came up. And I liked Gainesville.
And that would be around 45.
And I came in April 1945. I came to Gainesville.
Yeah. That was a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was already associated with the Witnesses.
With Jehovah's Witnesses, yes.
So you just had it open book. Open.
Open, yes. Came out and
with Laura.
And joined the congregation here.
And who was the older woman who pioneered down here?
Cora Maya.
Cora.
Mm-hmm.
Cora Maya.
Cora Minnie, that's the one Mabel.
Yeah.
Brought the truth to Mabel.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how much were they before you?
The Mayas were here in the county, I think, I think as far back as 1927.
Well, that far back?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. No, because Cora was about 20 years older than I was, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So she was.
And you worked with her?
I worked with her. So when Minnie got ill and had to stop going out, then Cora and I used to go out together. And I drove her car far because she was getting wrecked. It was hard for her to see and hard for her to drive. So I used to drive her car far.
Leon, I don't want to. How is your car holding up?
Yes.
Brother. It's in bad shape. I don't drive it out of town at all. And every little while it develops something new that you can't quite put your finger on and don't know quite what it is.
Yes.
But Mr. Donaldson, he's always taken care of me ever since I came to Gainesville, because all the friends went to him for their gas, and he used to do repairs, but he doesn't now. And so when that gets bad, I'll go and I say, Mr. Donaldson, I'm in trouble again. And so he say, well, we'll see. So sometimes it's something has to be tended to right away. And then this particular thing now, it's just like a tire was flat just about so far. You know, and every time you go, you kind of hit that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, there's something that sounds about like that, but it's not a flat tire. And so I don't know what it's going to be.
Well, let me tell you, I am not, I don't feel superior to you at all. I have had more car trouble, and it is just shameful. We made a great mistake of buying two of these high-powered cars. Both of them old. Well, we can't even keep the... We can't even keep them tuned up.
Well, of course, I didn't have a big bank account, so I've had to take secondhand old cars. This one is held together very well. See, I've had this one 4 or 5 years now. It was in pretty good shape. The body was in exceptionally good shape, and the inside. But the inside of the body is in bad shape now.
Oh.
Just going to pieces.
Just going to pieces.
Little by little. You know, it makes me think of that song they used to have here a few years back, Ain't Gonna Need This Old Place Anymore. You remember that one? I saw a movie on that. And that's the way I feel about the car. You know, this goes and that goes. Well, it's the ceiling. The fabric is just rotted, you know.
Yeah.
And right over here, on this side, just slightly back of the front seat, it started a little bit of a three-corner tear, about like that. I don't know what made that do that. Well, then... We went down to Plant City to an assembly just about 3 years ago, 2.5. And
in your car?
I took my car down, yes. There was two cars went in the group. And so one sister had three small children. And so I had taken them in my car. And she had gone with this other sister in her car somewhere else, and we were to meet over at the assembly place. And the little girl sat on the back seat there, and she was very active, and all of a sudden she jumped right up, and of course she just jumped up and hit her head on that little three-cornered chair and made it about like that. Well, I kind of taped it together. And then it went along quite some time, and I had a sister, one of the older sisters there, and I had taken her, well, she and her husband and her daughter, and I'd taken them to town. They didn't have a car, so I used to go over lots of times and get them if they had a lot of errands to do, you know, and drive them around. So she sat on the front seat with me, and her husband and daughter sat in the back, and she took a bag of groceries in front with her. And then she decided that she didn't want it. And so she got way over on the edge of the seat, and she got hold of this bag of groceries like this. When the wait comes back.
Yeah. She's going to have some coffee, I think. Oh, dear.
I'll tell you.
She wants to show you how those groceries work.
I want you to see what happened. Time they got that bag of groceries over on the back seat.
Yeah.
She says, Esther, take these groceries over onto the back seat. Woo! She says, what have I done? She put that hand and bag of groceries right up through that she kind of tear about that big.
Oh.
And it just stripped a piece about that wide right clear down. I tried to paste it together and sew it together, but it never would work. So that's a great big hole there now.
No.
Oh. And then by the back door, where that little hook is that you can hang things, it's broken away there a little bit. And then I went to put an umbrella in on the back window there, and as I did that, I aimed a little bit too high. And I made a little three-cornered tear in the back about that big. Well, that still stays about the same. But I can see all through it that the top is just getting threadbare. One of these days, I'm afraid it's going to fall right down on me.
Well, now, Mr. Donaldson, he's been long-suffering, hasn't he?
He certainly has. He's worked hard with me.
he's your banker too.
Yes, he was, because when I couldn't pay, he'd go ahead and do it and let me pay him as I could.
Yes.
I wish I had a Mr. Donaldson.
You buy a battery, they cost them.
Oh, yeah. Well, now let me tell you my battery experience this summer. It went out one morning, the battery's flat. And a young couple Jehovah's Witnesses made me a present a year ago of an AAA. I never did one. He was selling that, and then he came to me, and I told him I'd like it, but I couldn't take it out then. But if I could, why, I would be sure and remember and take it from him. And it wasn't but a few days. One day when I came in, Laura says, "Here's a package for you." And I said, "What's that?" She says, "I don't know." She says, "Something Pat Harvey brought in." And I opened it, and here it was, an AAA for a year. And they said they wanted to give it to you. Well, I was very pleased with that. And so when my battery was flat, I called the AAA, and they came over and got me started. And I went down to Mr. Donaldson, and he charged the battery. And it went just a short time. It was flat again. So I called them again, and this was on a Sunday. No, on a holiday. Now, see, what holiday was that? Must have been Christmas or New Year's. New Year's, I guess it was. No, Christmas, I guess. And so I drove the car over to that station, Shell Station, on 13th and 16th there. That's AAA. And so the man, he checked it out, and he says, "You've got a bad cell there, and I can put you in a new battery." And I said, "Well, I'd rather you just give it a charge." I said, "I trade with Mr. Donaldson, and he understands my car." And he said, "Okay." So they charged it, and then the next morning I went down to Mr. Donaldson. And he checked it out, and he says, "Everything seems to check all right now." And it wasn't but a few days before it was flat again. So I called him again. And the fellow said, he got it started, and he said something about coming over. And I said, "Well, thank you, but Mr. Donaldson's my regular man, and I'm going down to see him and see just what the trouble is here." So I went down to him, and the battery that I got from, was a Hurricane battery. What's the name of that concern? They used to be over in Southeast 2nd Street, and they're now down on South Main ways there. I can't remember what the name is. So he says that you go down there, he says, and you let them check that thing in good shape and see what the trouble is. So I went down, and they had heavier equipment than what Mr. Donaldson had, and they just put it right on and turned it up to what they call under load, is it? Something like that.
I don't know.
Give it a heavy test, you know. Mm-hmm. And they says, "No, that battery is gone." And I said, "Jehovah, how can I buy a new battery? I just can't do it. That's all there is to it. And what am I going to do?" So anyway, he called another fellow out, and they discussed it. And he says, "You give her a good buy on this." He says, "That backer's bad." Well, I felt a little better then. I thought, well, maybe they'll allow me a little something, because the backer still had a, not very much more time, but a little more time to go. And so when the young man got the papers ready, he says, "You'll have to come in and sign this." So I went in, sat down, and he says, "You're one of Jehovah's Witnesses, aren't you?" I says, "Yeah, how do you know?" He says, "You used to study with my mother when I was about that big." I says, "What's your name?" He says, "Billy Hanna." And sure enough, I did.
Is that right?
And so we discussed that a little. I says, "Now, Mr. Hanna, how much do I owe you?" He says, $4.25. And that battery would sell for around $25 if I had bought it outright. So I got through that without anybody having to wait on me.
Oh. Now, who was Billy Hanna?
He worked at this battery station place there. And I don't know. I wouldn't think that I would really be entitled to all that reduction when the other battery was pretty near the time up on it. But his boss emphasized, he says, "Now you give her a goodbye here." And that was before anything was said about me being one of Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yeah.
So.
Well, now, who was his mother?
I studied with her. Let's see now. Where the Rocky Point Road, and as you come out the Archer Road and cross the track there, and go up the old Micanopy Road, right where the Rocky Point Road branched off this way, there was a stone house right in there. And that's where they lived.
I see.
And I studied with them quite a long time. And then he had a bad heart, and he just simply stopped breathing one day. He died. And then she had to, left her with 3 or 4 children, and she moved. And so I lost track of her. Once in a while, I'd come across her in town. But she was no longer interested in study. But he was that little fella, as he said, just about so tall, and he remembered me.
One of the children.
Mm-hmm.
Say that. There was a Billy Hanna out here, but his mother's still out here. But she, I don't think she's studying.
Mm-hmm. Well, this woman lives down in the camp, that camp, Mobile Homes, out there on the Waldo Road.
Well, let me tell you. You know, I kept thinking, I lost contact with you all.
I know. Laura'd keep us saying every time she'd call Mabel, she'd say, "Have you seen Guy? Tell him to come over here. I want to see him."
Well, you see, I got spendthrift of time. I thought, well, there's plenty of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing some other things. And when I came back, I wanted to put my mind on it.
Mm-hmm.
And after Phil died, I just said, I thought Mabel would be all right.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, we planned that particular week.
Mm-hmm.
And I got everything ready over there. And she gave me a little book to study. And then she had another fall.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing right after another, you see, until she never started mending again.
No. And you know, it was a shock to me when Juanita called me up and told me, because I visited her between 3 and 4 Friday afternoon. She died at 20 minutes past 4.
20 minutes past 4?
Mm-hmm. See, I got up there a little after 3, and I went in to see her. And her mind had been so wandering. A week before when I was up there, it was terrible. But her whole appearance seemed a little better to me this time when I went in Friday. And I asked her how her back was. Was she suffering with that stone? She says, "No, that seems to be a little better." And I says, "How is your feet and ankles?" Well, she says, "They're giving me therapy." And then she, I believe she says, I hope you're not believing all those tales that they're saying about me. And I says, well, what tales? I haven't heard any tales. And she says, there's no truth in them. Well, I says, Mabel, if anybody's saying anything about you, I don't know anything about it. Well, I'm glad. She says, I thought by the looks of her face that she believed it. Now, I don't know. Now, that was the only thing she said that seemed a little bit off, and I don't know what that was. But shortly after that, she seemed to be a little distressed. And she said something, but she spoke so low, I couldn't hear very well. And I thought about it since, and I think now that she said that she wasn't feeling well, and I should go and come back some other time, but I didn't sense that, because I see something was happening to her. I didn't know what it was, and I was concerned, and so I just stood there, and she was, she looked like she was terribly tense and nervous and as though she didn't know what to do, and then she began to kind of move her hands this way, and then she began to do this way, and she says, I've got to have a shot. About that time, I think it must have been the nurse, it was the therapist, came in. And she spoke to her, and she says, how are you today, Mrs. Patterson? Mabel never answered her, but she was just doing these things. And she says, oh, yes, she says, now you remember, she says, you take a deep breath, she says, and you'll be all right. She says, you remember, you take a deep breath, which indicated to me that she'd had something like this before. And she tried to take a deep breath. She says, that's good, now another one. But she couldn't take the next one. So the nurse turned to me, she says, are you a member of her family? I said, no, I'm a friend. She said, would you mind going down in the lobby for a few minutes, and when we get her straightened around, then you can come back. So I said, no, I'll go. And I probably was down there 15 or 20 minutes, 15 minutes maybe. And it wasn't very long before she came out of the room and came down to the nurse's station there, and one of the nurses went back with her. And then one or two of the colored women that looked after the patients some, they would go in, and then they'd come outside the door and stand, and they'd go back in. And I thought, well, I wonder what's happening to her. But it got where I had to leave, because there was other things I had to do. And Anna Rabin is up there, and I'd been visiting with her, and so I said, I got to go, Anna. If they want to know, I said, you tell them that I had to go. And I got home just before 5 o'clock, and I just barely got into the house when Juanita called and says, Big Mama died at 20 minutes past four. Mm-hmm. And she says, the doctor said, either a heart attack or a blood clot. Well, then I could understand this trouble she was having with breathing. And then I called Mary, and she said she was up there Thursday, and Mabel complained of pains in her heart. So without a doubt, that's what it was.
She had had so much pain.
Oh, nobody but Jehovah God knows what that woman has suffered. It just makes me sick every time I go up there to see her. And I couldn't keep away.
Mm-hmm. She was in pain a long time before.
Yes, well, that began, she began to tell me about that long back, way back in almost a year ago, about April. And she said it was in the, like almost like the hip joint back here to the spine.
Yeah.
And then it just kept growing more and more. And I don't know whether they ever come to any conclusion what that was or not. I don't know.
I don't think she ever got medical attention that could tell.
Mm-hmm.
She never went to any of the specialists, you know. She only went over to Mr. Dr. Daly.
Yeah, well, then Dr. Daly once sent her over to a Dr. Moore here in Gainesville.
Yeah.
And he was the one that said it was bursitis.
Oh.
And that was sometimes a long, drawn-out affair, but you could wear it out, you could get the best of it. But I think she may have had that, but I think there was complications of some kind with it. What was the little book she gave you?
Study book.
I am. What one was it? Little blue book?
Mm-hmm.
Truth book.
You know, the one we used to use.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, I guess it's a minute. That's a wonderful little book.
That was a wonderful little book we used when I was studying with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess we did. I guess we did have a field day with it.
You know, I kept thinking, Mabel sort of rallied, you know, during the time when
mm-hmm.
the people were coming in.
That's right.
When Phil was sick
mm-hmm.
when he was, after he died. And it looked like she would be able, you know, she'd sit there and preside,
mm-hmm.
just like she was born to it. It looked like she was going to rally, you know,
yes.
and take hold
of it. Mm-hmm.
But that illness had just gone too far.
Gone too far, then. Mm-hmm.
Because she didn't give in to it.
No, she fought against it all she could. Tried to push herself and make herself go and do.
Now that was a nice little study group you had out here.
Yes. You know they're building a Kingdom Hall in Micanopy.
No.
Yes. It'll probably be open within a month or two.
Well, what do you
know? You know where Vernon Smith, well, Marguerite Smith, where they live?
Yeah.
Well, it's just a... All right, we'll say this is the road that goes back down by where Travis lived and then
yeah.
down in where the friends from Miami came up and bought.
Yeah.
And Smith's home is here. And right up here, right on the road, is where the Kingdom Hall is being built.
Yeah.
Here, about a month ago, there was a bunch of brothers got together and some come down from Jacksonville and brother came up with some helpers from St. Petersburg, and on a Saturday and a Sunday they put the four walls up ready for the roof.
Yeah.
And the next weekend they put the roof on.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. And then it was, of course, to do the inside, the plumbing and different things like that. And it's coming along. And so just as soon, I see our circuit servant will be coming. It'll probably be the latter part of March or maybe the first part of April. And I imagine when he comes, that it is supposed to be ready and they're supposed to have a congregation of Jehovah's Witnesses here in the Canopus.
Yeah. Well, now, how will that affect the little study groups?
Well, they'll have a Kingdom Hall right here where they can tie right in there. It's just Marguerite and Clara Spear now of the three. See, there was the three of us. I met with the three of them. And I don't see why they couldn't tie right in with that there. Because, you see, I was doing that, helping them out, because it wasn't convenient for them to get up to Gainesville very much.
Yeah.
Well, now with the Smiths, you see, all they've got to do is just go across the road.
And you see, Mother's all right.
Yes.
Yeah.
They just got to go across the road. And then Spear lives down in town there, and she said that her husband could take her there. And then at Gainesville, it was so long. From the time they left home till they get back was 3 hours. And he'd have to spend 2 hours doing something up there or nothing.
Yeah.
And it was hard on him. I can understand that.
Yeah.
Well, I said, now, if you have your Kingdom Hall right here in Micanopy, I said, he can take you over and then he can go back home and stay.
Yeah.
She says, that's right. So I would think that that would kind of solve that problem.
Yeah. Oh, that was such a nice little group
mm-hmm.
over at Mabel's.
Yes.
Yes. Now that was Marguerite and Claire and
Mabel.
There was somebody else.
Well, once in a while I'd bring somebody from Gainesville down with me.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Someone of the other sisters.
Now is Marguerite doing all right?
Marguerite's getting along pretty good now. You know, she had a bad fall in the store, the Winn-Dixie. and it strained the ligaments and muscles in her leg. And she was, at the time Travis was killed, she was in a wheelchair. She couldn't get out, hardly, take a step. It was so bad. But she's getting much better now, so she gets around. So I guess she'll come.
Now, I saw Claire the other day. Is she doing pretty well?
Yes, I think she is now. She went and had some x-rays. She had a terrible time with her stomach, and she, oh, it was so bad. And the doctor, Strange, couldn't see why she should be in such agony and pain, and so he told her to go up to Gainesville and get some x-rays. So she did, and she said they told her she had a cradle ulcer. I never heard of an ulcer described that way. But I would say, a cradle, you'd naturally think of a cradle as the cradle of the stomach, I would think, would be the bottom side of the stomach, not the top side. But she had a bad ulcer there. And so he's put her on a diet and given her some medicine, and she's doing a little better than she was. So maybe if they find out what it is and then get after it, maybe she will be better if she can stick to her diet. Well, now about that little blue book. Laura's very much interested to discuss it with you. She's in Jacksonville right now. She's been sick for a month, real sick.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd hoped that she was coming home Saturday, but she wasn't quite ready to come. I talked with her daughter, and so I don't know whether she'll be home this week or not.
She has those spells.
Well, now this time, she had complications of some kind. I knew she'd been going down, but at the last, her kidneys just shut right off entirely. And then she got this virus that caused so much nausea on top of it.
Oh.
And so she just, in 2 or 3 days' time, she just went right downhill. Because I guess about 2 weeks previous to that, she began passing blood in the urine. And she says, well, that means I've got either kidney stone or gravel. And so she went to doing something for that. Well, the blood stopped, but the pain every time she urinated was still there, and it didn't seem to stop. It would patch ease up a little, and then it would come right up again. And then kidneys began to do less and less till they got down where there was practically nothing. And so then I called her.
She never had that before.
Not in recent years,
yeah.
No. And she's had cases of where she had would perhaps get hold of some hard water or something, and that would stop her kidneys.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. If she'd drink a glass or two of city water, that would stop them in no time.
Oh, really?
I never heard
yeah.
of that.
Oh, yeah. She has very weak kidneys, and she's had trouble with them a great many years. She's always had to be so careful. But I don't know whether it was something that she got hold of like that or what. And then, you know, she had that skin trouble, that intense itching, and then you would see it coming up underneath the skin, red, and she could just dig, she would sometimes, she'd scratch it so that it would break the skin.
Oh.
And she was coming along fairly good from the kidney, and then she had a setback with that. And I don't know what caused that. The doctor up there says it was emotional. And she didn't believe it at first. But last year she had a spell of it. Not too bad a spell, nothing but what we could combat between us. And she says, well, I'm afraid I'm going to have to give in and admit it is emotional.
Oh. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. So I don't know I don't know what it could be this time, because it was before Mabel died that she had to.
Oh, I don't think any of it. so much going on that it yes, can just
I know.
Get you
yeah.
if you
and
don't watch out.
Laura loves people. And their problems become her problems.
Yeah.
And among the friends, you know, some of them call her real often, and she'd call them, and they'd have problems, you know, and
yeah.
they'd tell her their problems, and then she'd begin to figure and work on it in her mind,
yeah.
this, that, and the other thing. And one day she began scratching her back, and I said, "Look out." I says, "You're getting emotional." And she says, "Yes, I am." I says, "But you've got to fight against it." So I just don't know.
Yeah. Even Laura can take just so much of that.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Just so much as she can.
Now, they don't talk to you as much like that as they do to Laura.
No. Well, you see, Laura's there all the time.
Yeah.
And Laura's a very sympathetic person.
Yeah.
And they know she can't get out. And so they call her. And naturally, if you're talking with somebody and you got problems, it ends up by telling your problem what a time you're having.
Yeah. Well, they don't think of you quite like that, do they?
No. There's only one Laura.
Yes.
Only one Laura. Now, one of them talks with me quite a bit at times about her problems, just as she does with Laura. But Laura is Laura, and there isn't another one like her.
Well, they call you when they like for you to help them with the study groups and things like that.
Well, I have two studies, two young women, and then there was a couple that I studied with three, four years ago. I studied a long time with that couple. And then she got all mixed up and messed up, she said, and she just got to stop her study till she got straightened out. Now, the husband would have liked to have continued. But anyway, the study was stopped. And, I guess it was all of 2 years ago. Last fall, they came up to see us, and we're speaking about, and we got to talking about it, and so he began to talk about the studying. She says, "Do you want to start the study again?" He says, "Yes, I do." So she says to me, she says, "Well, you wait till I get my house fixed up, straightened around," because she'd been trying to work some, but they never got it straightened up. Well, here, about a month ago, she had a heart attack and died.
Oh my, is that right?
And her sister brought her husband over to the house the next morning, and they didn't know that Brother Bender was here no longer, because they wanted a J.W. funeral and wanted him to conduct it. Well, we told them that Brother Bender was no longer here, but we had a new congregational servant, Brother Glower, and it was very nice, and they would like him, and so they said, all right, they wanted him. And then her husband says, as soon as I get straightened out, he says, I'm starting my studies again, and I'm coming to the hall. And so I expect Wednesday he'll come over to the house to have start a study with him again.
Mm-hmm. Who conducted the service yesterday?
Brother Sale, the same one that
same
did Sale.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he sounded a little different. I sat so far back I couldn't see him over there.
Uh-huh. Well, it might sound a little different inside and I'm
yeah.
being on the outside.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I got that pretty good.
Oh, did you?
Yes. The trouble in taking it in an auditorium, it takes everything.
Yes.
And a lady sat in front of me that had an earphone on. And she belongs to our congregation. And it'll growl sometimes, you know, and then it's a squeal, and I've got every bit of that growling and squealing right on there. But it didn't last very long, you know, but it came through. I thought it came through quite good.
How could I get a good tape of of Brother Sill's funeral service. I would like to have a good one like that.
Well, the only, now, if it didn't have a few of those little squeals and growls on it, that would be a very good one.
Well, I'd like
you would have to sometime when he's conducting a funeral be there with it and take it. Because I don't know of anyone that's ever taken any of his.
You know what they ought to do? They ought to just have a microphone there for anyone who wants copies of those things.
Mm-hmm. Now, if it had been at the hall, I could have gone into the library and taken it.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been okay, like I do the public talks.
Yeah.
For her.
Oh, they have it fixed so you can.
Well,
do
there
that.
Is a loudspeaker in the library.
Oh, I see.
And so I go in there. And they have to put chairs in the library. They have about a dozen in there where people can go and sit.
Uh-huh.
But it's generally pretty quiet there. So that I get the talks very nicely.
Yes, I would like to have. I'd like to have a good microphone and have him talk right into it.
Mm-hmm.
And get it perfect. The kind that Mabel
mm-hmm.
herself would like.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know they were going to be up there,
mm-hmm.
so I hadn't checked with anyone or
no.
made any preparations
mm-hmm.
or anything.
Well, I didn't think of taking the recorder till it was about time to go. If I had thought of it beforehand, possibly I could have made arrangements with Mr. Williams to have had the recorder put near the podium somewhere,
yeah.
perhaps.
Yeah.
And then I wouldn't have gotten the auditorium noises there, the audience noises, but I didn't think anything about it.
Now, how would you get in touch with him if you just wanted to call him?
Brother Sale?
Uh-huh.
466-3633 is his phone number.
466?
That's Micanopy.
Oh, he's not out in Micanopy.
Well, he's out there, and it comes under the Micanopy Exchange.
Where is he?
No, he is one of those that's out there at Smith, Travis.
Oh, he is?
There's five or six trailers in back there.
And he's one of them?
And he's one of them, yes.
Right there with Marguerite.
Mm-hmm. And there's Brother Abate, and Brother McNatt, Brother Berger, Brother Sale, Brother Worth, Doug Worth, and Don Worth used to be out there, but he sold his trailer and thought he wanted to come into town, and now he wishes he was back out there. You see, we can call him from Gainesville and not have to pay anything.
Yes. 466?
Yeah, 3633.
3633.
Mm-hmm. Jerry
Sell. Jerry, S-E-L-L?
Yes.
Now that's lucky. I'm glad I asked you.
Mm-hmm.
What does he do?
He's pioneering. He's a pioneer.
All of his time?
Well, I think he works 2 days a week and then puts the rest in pioneering. And he's our theocratic ministry school servant.
Oh.
And I expect that when they open up his hall here that will take those families away from our congregation.
Yes.
And they're integrating in Alachua now, and so we'll lose some more from our congregation that live in Alachua of white, the whites now, so since they integrate, then they can go up there.
Yeah.
So it's making changes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What does he work at?
I don't know what he is doing just now. I guess he's done different things.
Brother Bender was a leather man.
Well, he bought that shoe repair, but he really was in the fence business.
Oh,
The Bender Fence there in Gainesville. That was his business.
Mm-hmm.
And then this Nick Aliotis, his health wasn't good, and he wanted to sell. So there was a colored brother in Gainesville that was working for the Greek shoe repair man. And so he and Brother Bender went in together and bought Aliotis out.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Brother Bender went, Brother Funk, John, young John Funk, took over Brother Bender's share in the shoe repair. And Brother Philmon has the fence business.
Uh-huh.
Well, I'll miss those sessions out here. Mm-hmm. I don't think we'll ever have any to take the place of them. Mabel had... She was strong, wasn't she?
Very strong. Mm-hmm. She knew what she knew, and you couldn't tell her that she didn't know.
And it was convincing when she talked about
it. She talked about it, that's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was.
Now, she's influenced a lot of people, hasn't she?
Oh, she has, yes. Yeah. Yes, because when I first came to Gainesville, Laura was... able to be about then, and Laura used to come down, and she'd bring two or three people, friends with her, and they would devote one day to Bible studies down here in Micanopy.
Mm-hmm.
And they would, some of them would bring something to eat, and then Mabel would have Mark come over there, and she'd prepare something, they'd have their lunch there, and then they'd finish up in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people that she has worked with.
Yeah. She had several colored people.
Yes, she did.
She
mm-hmm.
worked with.
Yeah. She did.
Oh, I know several of them out here that mm-hmm. that she talks to, has talked to.
Yeah, and they were there yesterday.
Yeah, Uncle Gil was there.
Mm-hmm. Brother Gil and Maggie and. I guess one of Brother Gil's sons, wasn't it? And his wife.
Yes, I don't know him, that one.
And it looked like, at Travis's funeral, I saw both of Brother Gil's sons, and this looked like one of them that came in there into the
mm-hmm.
funeral yesterday.
You can spend the night with us?
I probably better go back. Mm-hmm.
Well, let me tell you, it's perfectly all right either way. Let me trot around here a minute. You and Mamma will visit a little bit.
She went in because her eyes were hurting her.
Yeah, too much light.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and she has very bad eyes.
Yeah,
and they're giving her some trouble.
She was telling me that her eyes were
And you
bad.
Got that to happen then. We'd
yeah.
be so delighted for you to spend the night. We
yes.
could give you a gown and a good room.
Well, I thank you. But so long as Sister Jones is away, I kind of like to be there.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
No. Perfectly all right. But we just wanted you to know we'd love
yeah.
to have you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. Let me trot around here a little bit. And you... You do the same thing now and make
yeah.
stuff free.
Well,
no, I tried
here.
To open it up a little bit, Faye.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to
do.
Let me help you do the dishes.
Oh, well, I'll pick them up.
I'm the dish man.
Yeah, the dishwasher.
Well, you all get the dishes started while
yeah,
I go out here.
We can do that. we can get them started.
Because I know how it is when after you've worked hard all day and then have dishes to do late at night and...
Well, I tell you, it's not very much problem with us because Guy is really awfully nice about, since I do a little too,
mm-hmm.
he's...
I wish you could meet Sister Jones. You
yeah,
just
I like
love her. She thinks everything of God.
Guy is very fond of you all.
She's just taken him under her wing like he was her son.
Well, I know he missed. He's safe. I don't know how he does what he does. because you see, he's at the university, and that's a full-time job. And we have a place in town, and that's just a community. And then we come out here, and he has a lot of energy. But you know, he loves selling meals.
I know he does.
I mean, and you know, the thing about it, he probably knows them better than anybody else out here.
Without a doubt.
And has a deeper feel for them.
Deeper feel for them, yes. Yes, because he's, Mabel used to tell us of him coming down, sitting out on the porch there with them, and visiting and discussing.
Oh, they talk about everything. From Jehovah to how to raise a garden.
That's right. May I drive them for you?
I'll just put them over here and let them drain, and I'll just talk with you a little bit here. As I said, yeah, that'd be fine.
Well, they were lovely people.